What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The second day of school, I wait for that letter, the one that tells me which foods I won't be allowed to send to school with my child as a precaution for another child in the case of a severe allergy. We are all well ingrained with the no peanut rule, but over the years, I've been held back from sending a variety of foods to school. It's a complete and total inconvenience for me, but it's a constant worry, a panic, and a life and death situation for another family, and I need to keep that in mind. We read books and manuals as new parents about when to introduce foods and solids, and then you can add in the added fear if they actually have an allergic reaction to something. Allergies are one of the most common ailments, causing children to miss school and parents to miss work. Left untreated or unresolved, stuffy noses, itchy skin, and irritated bellies can lead to actual chronic asthma, eczema, inflammatory bowel disease, and neurological disorders. You can add in fatigue, irritability, body aching, digestive problems, and other vague ailments all typical of allergy. It can also be related to environmental factors, additives, body chemistry, addictions, parasites, and childhood illness. Lori Prushing is all too familiar with the issues involving allergies and children, to the point, I think, of her desperate tears in the pantry one night. So much so that she became a holistic nutritionist to focus on children with food allergies and finding the right supplementation as well. She created her business and the website Allergies and Me. So she's got amazing blogs covering topics like picky eaters and pooping. Thought I'd say that. The immune system. I'm going to ask about the NEMCHECK protocol and where we're really seeing a ton of hidden symptoms. So welcome to Living Your Life with Leanne Lang, the podcast brought to you by Extension Marketing. And as always, if you're looking for business tools, ways to be able to market yourself, check out their website, extensionmarketing.com. Lori, so nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Did I describe it well? I when I was researching the topic, I didn't realize, you know, how deep it actually goes.
You completely hit it all.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
I'm sitting here mouth open.
Yeah. Okay, she hit on it. So at least people will know what kind of what we're heading into.
Yep.
And I think, you know, when we were talking outside, you know, like I think that first story, like how usually the, for me, it's always like the how did you end up here? And it was a pretty emotional roller coaster for you as to how you ended up in this seat 14 years later.
Yep. Totally was. I mean, the boys were so young, and we had all kinds of things, you know, gastro, random stomach aches, headaches, not sleeping, hyperactivity, dark circles, bloated bellies, eczema, everything that you listed, we had them all. I mean, I actually have a slide and we went through every single symptom. We've had them all between both of them. And we just started looking for answers. They weren't sleeping. We weren't sleeping. We were exhausted. And specialist after specialist, you know, tests are normal. No, nothing's wrong. You know, toddler diarrhea. Yeah. That's common. You know, like he never had a normal poop. We're going to talk about poop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. Yeah. We're going to talk about poop. Very so big. How old were the boys? Like this started incredibly young.
Yeah. They were 4 and 5.
They were 4 and 5.
4 and 5.
So when you made it through the, you know, the breastfeeding and the implementations of solids and kind of going through the applesauce and pureed carrots, was that all seemingly normal at the time for you?
Yep. Cereal, of course, was in there, and it was either probably corn or soy-based and not knowing anything of it, you know. And then you move to Cheerios and then Goldfish and then a whole lot of processed foods. And then the symptoms just started creeping up. And they were eating this stuff. And then they, of course, became picky eaters, self-limiting. That's all they wanted to eat. The sugars, the yogurts, the ice creams, everything was processed. So, when we started looking for answers, test after test, we were like, you know what? I had a nutritionist back then, and he helped me when I had given birth. And he just said, why don't you just do a food allergy test? And I'm like, we don't have food allergies in our family. I don't know.
It took you that long, though, until the ages of 4 and 5 to actually... Yep. Have that dialogue and have that discussion.
Yep. You just think, oh, it's a phase. Oh, we'll just get through this. You know what I mean? You're just always, and then year after year, you're exhausted. You're a walking zombie. And then you're like, enough. You know, they were waking up during the night, staying awake, bouncing off the walls. And you're like, this is wrong.
Were they able to express that their bellies didn't feel right or that they were cramping? Like, there wasn't an expression for them to know because it was how they kind of felt all the time. All for them the to time. Not think that it was different.
That is an excellent question, because ours was still nonverbal at five. And we're like, you know, what's going on? You know, at the school, the teachers are trying to show us, oh, there's signs there, learning difficulties. So no, he would just scream, cry, and tantrum all the time. And then, of course, my youngest, looking up to his big brother, would follow suit. So I had like two screaming banshees, and it was like we just couldn't take them anywhere. They were just hyperactive and unhappy and in pain, but we just didn't know it.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I would have stayed in the pantry. You was like, here's an idea. I would have just stayed in there, had a kid cry and be like, I could just figure it out. I'll be here for the night.
Yeah.
So it was desperate measures.
It was. So by the time my nutritionist said, you know, why don't you do, I was like, you know what? Sure. We were the first of our generation. And I kept saying, you know what? I feel like mommy intuition, right? The mommy intuition kicks in. You're like, every time they eat this, they go ballistic. Yeah, I'm like, I think it's the food. Everyone thought, oh, you're crazy. It's not the food. Well, with that first allergy test, and it's a blood test, and I didn't know this. I didn't know what we were getting into, right? Two pages of all foods listed, and they were off the charts for the stuff that they were eating every day. So gluten, dairy, corn, soy. Just all off the charts. And you're like, now what? So again, we had to be guided through, okay, you have to start removing the foods, calming the immune system, you know, building back their bowel flora, probiotics, supplementation.
Okay, so let's go through that. So yeah. Step one, your nutritionist says you need to have them checked for allergies.
Yep.
You go in and you have blood work drawn. Yep. For both boys.
One first.
The oldest. The oldest first.
Yeah, he was worse.
So blood work comes back. You're given this sheet with pretty much almost every food you can think of.
Yep.
Is there like, I would think a bit of guilt. Like, why didn't I think of this sooner? Am I allowed to say that?
You know what? Yes and no. I think the guilt came after, but at first one, overwhelm. Like, you're just like, now what? And then no one told me. No one told me these foods could cause this. And everyone around me, that includes practitioners and professionals, oh, no, 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 it's not the food. It can't be the food. So you're constantly reinforced with this message, right? So it was overwhelmed. Like, now what do I feed them? Because of the pizza and burgers and, like, French fries, everything they were eating every day was on this list. So now what do I feed them?
So, okay, that would be the overwhelming is seeing the results. And then it's the now what?
Yep.
Right. It's okay. So where do you start? And then it was watching the reaction now of your boys as you're taking things off the menu. What was happening?
Oh boy, we went through some tough times. Because I was outnumbered.
They probably want French fries, all of this stuff. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't realize this, but you can be totally addicted to these things. The stories that I hear from my family is now, like, sneaking into the pantry in the middle of the night and scarfing down Cheerios. The mothers are like, "What's that? That's addictive behavior." And I didn't know that was possible. And both my boys were there. So yep. They wanted those foods, and it was like, okay, you know what? We had to put our foot down. They're not even in the house. We're not eating them. You're not eating them. And it was tough. Like the first week, 2 weeks, tantrums, hunger strikes, not eating this. I think they both tried that once, and I simply, you're not going to starve? Nope. Okay, no supper? Right. Bed. Bye.
So the hunger strike, they attempted it. It didn't quite work. They attempted it once.
And never again.
So yeah. When you mentioned, so for your husband, it's eliminating the foods in the house. So that took a toll on you. I mean, you're not even allowed to have the foods that you enjoy eating in the house based on them kind of sneaking in and trying to find them.
Yep. So staggered process.
What did you give up?
I know. It took me a while. It took us all a while because it's a staggered process. And again, now I see those families and I'm able to say, you know what? Been there. I get it. The moms that are making four different meals each mealtime, like, they're doing that now, and that's what we did. So, okay, he had all the allergies. He got his meal, and we all kind of had this, like, say, a stew or something like that. And he got his gluten-free, dairy-free stuff. But it was just slow, step-by-step eliminating. First, we removed all dairy and replaced it, and it was hard back then. We didn't have, like, the coconut yogurt and all that stuff. So I learned to make a lot of things from scratch. And then after that, it was gluten, just step-by-step. 1 week at a time. So when you go grocery shopping, as soon as it runs out, you just buy the equivalent at the store. There was a lot of gluten-free stuff back then. So one step at a time. And then maybe about a year in, my youngest, his symptoms started going through the roof. And we looked at each other and we said, should we do this again for him? They're brothers. So, okay, let's do it. Oh, my God. All the same allergies, completely different symptoms. And they're brothers.
So can you go through what each showed? Because I, even looking through the list of what hidden symptoms can really be like. So what were the two different scenarios for you?
And this is what I teach my families. It's just so fascinating. That's where I started getting hooked, going, what's going on with the food and what's it doing to their little bodies? And again, it's only what you, okay, you only when you remove it, then you can correlate because the symptoms disappear and you're like, ah, that was that. So for example, gluten. Gluten for my oldest, when he ate it, it caused eczema, it caused hyperactivity, and it caused belly bloat, and he just wouldn't eat. He'd be starving, take two bites, and not eat again. But gluten in my youngest caused high anxiety, night terrors, and insomnia.
And you only knew this once you...
Once it was removed. Me and my husband are like, do you realize that that's gone? We knew it was insomnia because, well, anxiety too. He was only seven, around six or seven. I remember that. And he would be so nervous the night before, like, you know, a test at school. He wouldn't sleep. So I remember walking in one time at like 6 o'clock in the morning and he's up awake in bed. And I'm like, what time did you wake up? And he said, midnight. And he was awake that whole time quietly. And I'm like, something's really wrong. So when the gluten was gone, he sleeps like a rock. The anxiety slowly melted away. And then I remember saying to my husband, hey, you know what? We haven't had someone wake up screaming in a long time. Because once a week, someone was waking up screaming and we were up with them for hours. And that just kind of melted away.
So two very different, a multitude of symptoms, very different in each one. But in removing it, you started to see those things removed as well.
Yeah, they just melted away.
Hmm. Okay, so the gluten was the start.
Yep.
And then where do you go from there?
Dairy. Like, I now say to my family, there's the biggest four. There's gluten, there's dairy, there's soy, and there's corn. These are all really, really hard to digest. They have large protein molecules, and if they're not broken down properly, they just cause what I call interference in the body and all kinds of things. And it's different per child. So I always go one step at a time. Now today, I say it's easier to remove dairy. Because there's so many equivalents out there. You can do almond, you can do coconut, you can do rice, like milk, yogurt, you name it. The body clears itself of dairy in 2 weeks. So in 2 weeks, you can see in your child a different baseline. Like if that truly was attached to, you know, dairy and their tolerance, all the symptoms will melt away.
Can you say were there different symptoms for each boy with the dairy? Or where do you see dairy show up more in symptoms that typically come through?
Yes. Dairy causes mucus. So it'll cause mucus because the body doesn't want it, the protein, to touch the membrane. So you're going to see it in ear infections, in asthma, in that postnasal drip, in that chronic cough. And now that you mention it, it was ear infections in my oldest, and my youngest always had a runny nose. And I did not attribute that. But when dairy removed, it was like, okay, just melted away. And months later, you're like, hey, he doesn't have that constant, you know, red, runny nose anymore.
So, and it's interesting. So 2 weeks and the dairy is out of your system.
Yep.
Are there other items that take a lot longer or other items that are shorter?
That's why I go for dairy first, because okay, then the parents will usually see and then they'll get invested, because if there isn't an intolerance
there. Because over 2 weeks, right, you're seeing things.
You see. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. And then again, over time that I've learned, gluten takes 6 months to clear from the body. It's that insidious. It's just resides and it's all over. So it takes that long to clear. So that's a lot longer to see symptoms. Like celiac. I talk to the people that are celiac now, and literally when they finally get off it, even a small little crumb can send them into a tailspin. Yeah.
But when you're a parent and you're looking at expectations, there's this, the dairy is a good indicator that you would see changes the quickest of all the of all the other ailments.
That kind of usually gets them invested. They're like, whoa, what is this? Just like we did, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, you're kind of going through this going, not believing. But once you have the test, you see it black and white. And I remember sharing it with family members because who thought, you know, you know, grandpa and grandma were still feeding them whatever. And I'm like, I showed them the test and I'm like, you know what? We can't have these foods anymore. It's showing that it's hurting them. It's not a treat. It's hurting them. Then they finally got on board and made those changes. But no, you see the biggest change if there's going to be in the quickest time. And then the parents are invested and want to learn more and want to explore more. It's like, okay, these symptoms are gone. We're still dealing with, you know, dark circles or maybe insomnia or maybe constipation. What else can we learn?
How different is it going to be between, as you mentioned, you had crazy loose stool, you had poop everywhere, and constipation, two very different, you know, it's coming from the same tract, but it's dealing with a very different.
Yep. And again, it's funny you say that because that was both my boys. We never had just normal average. One of them was chronically diarrhea and the other one was constipated to the point where we're rushing to ER, find out he's impacted. He has to have an enema. Like, just not moving at all. So, and again, I can't tell if it was dairy or gluten because we were like doing so much at that time. But when both of those were gone, all that disappeared. Just disappeared. They started being regular, no pain. Even now today, I still ask them.
When was the last bowel movement? I think his parents is like a constant conversation. Or it's like as soon as they complain of a stomach ache, it's the first question that comes up. Okay, so when was the last time you went?
Yep.
So you're going through all of this. At what point do you realize I've suffered, my family has suffered enough? Where was all the information? Where was all of this available to me?
Yeah, excellent question. Because somewhere in there, I think around the time where my youngest had the test and I was like, oh my God, brothers, same allergies, completely different symptoms. I'm like, okay, why? So I was hooked. I'm like getting all the books that I can. I was all every spare minute reading about nutrition and learning disabilities and how the body works, how the brain works, you know, how digestion works. And then the years just go by, all the symptoms melted away. We came out of it. And then somewhere in there, my husband's like, you know what? You're totally into this. You should go back to school and then maybe you can start helping other families go through what we went through. And I finally listened to him. And it's funny because I was able to do an open house day at, there's two learning centers in Ottawa and I went to both of them. And it's funny, they both had the same course line and the one that had the allergy course, that's where I went, CSNN. I wanted
because
that
you
course.
Wanted that.
Yeah. And going through the course, I was that class nerd in the back because everything I lived and I read with my boys, when I learned it in the classroom, I was just aha moments. I was like, oh, that's why when I did X, this happened, you know? Everyone knew my story. It's such an open and sharing environment. You just share what you're going through. So everyone knew about my boys.
You know, there's one thing to have allergies, but when you're in this, you know, classroom setting and you're learning about this, how much of an impact does what we ingest and what we consume and what we put on our bodies really play a factor in our overall health? And I'm talking environmental factors. I'm talking everything.
Totally agree. God, I've met so many people and had these conversations that, yes, it's environmental. It's what we're exposed to. It's our genetics. It's our bowel flora that we've inherited. So how healthy are you? How strong are you? What's your immune system like? And are you able to ingest and digest and absorb and detox all the things that we're exposed to in the environment? God, it's funny because when you take one step and you learn, you take another step and you step, and then you look back and you see how far you have come and there's no going back. You know, there's no, I don't want to return to that. It's like, wow, they're doing what to the animals? There's what in sunscreen? What? Because again, we started doing more testing when we were after the allergy test, and my oldest is full of heavy metals. And again, as a mom, you get this test and you're like, what? He's got mercury and aluminum and lead. Where is this coming from? So then you have to go and research more. So I learned through my oldest, who taught me, everything he was exposed to, breathed, put on his skin, eat pesticides, it stayed in his body because he just couldn't detox it. His systems were topsy-turvy and his body was not able to detox.
Are some people, individuals, able to detoxify much easier than others?
Oh, of course.
Because we're all in the same environment and yet somebody's going to be affected and not.
Yeah. I think there's varying degrees of all of that, right? So if you're healthier, your immune system's strong, you got a great bowel flora, you have no problems.
You inherit the bowel? You just mentioned that. There's a genetic component. You inherit your so if you have a family history of people who have issues, it's passed on.
Yes, and that's, again, what my boys taught us. They were our guarding light. So from them, I did the allergy test. Lactose intolerance, you know, I kind of suspected my whole life, but I just never paid attention. And then I started getting serious about it. And then my mother started paying attention. God bless her. She was like, you know what? I got to do this test too. So she did the test. Guess what? Lactose intolerant, gluten intolerant. So it was clear that it came down from my mother's side.
Okay. But this is, I think, where the arguments start, right? Yep. Is where do you go from intolerance, right, the intolerance to the allergy, and where do you pay attention, and how society has changed, and why are we dealing with so many more allergies? Like, peanut allergies 50 years ago is not what we're seeing it today. So why such a drastic shift for these generations?
This is the million-dollar question, right? This is the one that everyone's asking. That's the first thing that the family say if they do the allergy test. I'm like, why? After all these years and all the reading that I've done, again, everything that we just talked about is the thing that all interplays. It's like that rain bucket analogy. You've heard of that, eh? If everything that's in your rain bucket, you know, the tolerance, your microflora, you know, have you gone on antibiotics? What have you been exposed to? You know, what was your mother's health like? And then the bucket will just spill over and you start to have symptoms like the eczema and the asthma and the rashes and the gastro. It breaks my heart every time I see an article that, you know, a child dies from eating a cookie. Like, that just shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be. So sliding scale, like, all I can think of is that it's a sliding scale. It goes from sensitivity, moving into intolerance, moving to full-blown allergy. And everyone's different, you know? I had one client, I remember he said, I love ice cream, I'm addicted to ice cream. I eat one cone, I'm fine. Two, I'm fine. Three, boom, I'm rushing to the bathroom. So compounds. It compounds in your
body.
I'm
like that with my wine and cheese. Two slices, I'm okay. Three, I look 6 months pregnant. The next day, I have cramps. Like, it's you know, it's amazing. And sometimes, you know, even as adults, right? It's like you decide what's the how much do I want to weigh in?
Yep.
Do I want the cheese or do I want and it's like, okay, no, I'm up for the discomfort for a couple hours. I'm going to choose the cheese. Or you're kind of going, no, it wasn't that pleasant that time. It wasn't worth it.
Yep.
But we're making these decisions as adults. And yet for children, they're not quite, they don't have that information or the explanation to be able to say it. So you do the course, you start to implement this. Was it, you know, it's one thing to be able to show a person a list and be like, by the way, these are all the foods that they're allergic to. This is what they're intolerant to. Here's your list. Go home. Or I really feel the benefit then is, okay, where's my how? Okay, now that I know this, now I want to know how do I deal with it and how do I fix it and what are my suggestions and how do I make alternatives? And I would think that's really your experience is to, this is your reality. Now here's how you're going to deal with it.
We didn't have guidance. We got the test and, okay, don't eat these foods. Bye. And I actually have people that come to me that have had that test and their lists are even longer. Like, there's a whole bunch of red down the first page and they're like, what do I do? I was literally, don't eat these foods. Bye. So because we went through that, we didn't have the guidance. That's what I want to be. I want to be the help that I needed 14 years ago. So I'll take your hand. I'll show you. Because 14 years ago, I was literally reaching out online, Yahoo groups. I mean, Facebook wasn't even around back then, right? So I was Yahoo groups and phoning moms and how are you doing this? And like just trying to cut through the jungle of what am I going to do next? So that's what I do. I hold their hand like, okay, one thing at a time. Start with the milk. Then one of the ice cream, swap it out. Yogurt, swap it out. Butter, gone. Use this instead, coconut oil. It's just one little change at a time. Just one. I've had moms come to me and say, I want to overdo the whole pantry. And I'm like, you're setting yourself up for failure because you'll just be in there crying like I was closing the door, because that means everything will have to go. Everything. Because dairy and gluten are in everything, every packaged good. That's what, when people start to realize and read ingredients, they're
right.
so overwhelmed.
Because as you're mentioning that, you're talking about gluten and dairy, you know, their immediate thought is, okay, bread and milk, right? Or the yogurt or the cheese.
Yep.
But what we're not thinking about is, yeah, this is where the bad wake-up call is when you take the time to look at the yeah. ingredients. Because it's one thing to say I can't have that glass of milk. It's another to say in my favorite food package process, it's in there too.
It's in there too. It's in salad dressings. It's in, gosh, condiments. You know, all these things you wouldn't think of. But when you start looking at the ingredients, it's like that's where the daunt becomes.
So have you done that list of here's where all the hidden items are.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's the list of things you can't have. Now here's the added list that I've created for you that has all the hidden places that you're going to find all of those things. It's like a Pandora's box. Once you open it, it's like you're a domino.
Yeah. Right?
It's never ending.
Yeah. That's where it definitely gets daunting, because you learn that there's no regulation for naming and packaging, right? And so what? Sugar has like 50 different names out there. Gluten has 30 different names out there. There's wheat, there's hydrolyzed whatever, there's, yeah. So you have to break it down. I literally have a page per, okay, just watch for these ingredients. And then you just realize that there's no way around it. You have to get back into the kitchen and start to make it, pull out my old grandma's recipes. All right, make it really simple, and then just substitute in the gluten-free flour, coconut oil. It's kind of like a retro, eh? Like you're having mm-hmm. these old grandma's recipes,
gosh,
putting a spin.
But if we go retro, we were healthier.
Yes.
We weren't obese. You know, all of the issues that we are now seeing is when you go retro and you eat real raw foods,
yep.
natural ingredients.
Yep. Got to get back into the kitchen. And I was never a good cook back then. Oh, my husband will laugh. The first meal I made for him was pierogies.
You attempted a pierogi?
I don't know why.
Start with like a spaghetti sauce. Okay.
I went pierogies and it turned out horrible. He didn't say a word, but even to this day, he'll talk about that. But I've come so far from that. And just because of my boys, I've had to learn to make bread from scratch, ice cream from scratch, make my own cheese. I make cashew cheese, baking, you name it. And now I can take any recipe. I've actually taught courses now. You can take any recipe and make it healthy. Just swap out gluten, dairy, corn.
Egg.
Can't be done. Yeah, even egg.
Even egg.
Even egg.
So you're doing all of that. How much, though, time needs to be invested in? I mean, I'm sorry, most people are just reaching for the bread to make a sandwich.
Yep.
And just making the sandwich for some of us is really annoying because that takes time. You've had to actually go and make the bread. So,
yep.
You know, that's time.
It
like
is.
How do you suggest, or is there a prep time? Is there a prep day when you're doing all of this?
Yeah, good question. Same thing, evolution, because those are the moms that I see now. What I was 14 years ago, working full time, both parents working full time, you pick up the kids, you're starving, and then you just end up, you know, grabbing something or going taking out. One thing at a time. So we've evolved into prepping on the weekends. So when groceries fall when they do, but prep time is definitely on the weekends. And as the kids get older, like when they start, you know, settling down and starting to pay attention, we started educating them, showing them documentaries, teaching them about food, making a garden. Like, okay, yeah, you can shred this lettuce, you can start doing this. And now that they're teens, they're making whole meals by themselves.
When you talk about documentaries, that's okay. We're always allowed. You know, it was just like a little bit of music.
That yeah. is my meditation reminder.
Oh, good for you. Can we talk about Lori, who started her meditation and who, by the way, went and got that 10% happier book? I'm so excited.
All because I watched your podcast. It was one of those goosebump moments. I was just like, oh my God, this is exactly what I needed to hear. I got that book, read it in 3 days, and that's it. It's been 2 weeks and I've like meditated every day.
It's a great, like, I'm so excited. Like, for me, this is like my happy moment is when people just say, like, you know, I listened or I thought about it. I went and did something and it's changed. Like, those are my winning moments. And I'm so excited because a lot of people have actually picked it up. And I even had, like, my niece's they just got my new husband started on it. And
wow.
He's like a couple, and he's loving it. And I'm just like, hey, these are like big wins for me.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so
sidebar.
So that's, well, at least now I know what that app sounds like. It's really quite soothing.
Yep.
I don't even know, where was I? We were talking the time commitment to,
oh, yes.
to doing this.
Busy families, yes. How do you do it? Prep. So again, you just evolve into it. Get the kids involved. They're young. They can do all kinds of things, even if it's set the table, shreds.
Are they aware now? So how old are the boys now?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. They're 18 and 16.
Okay. So where are they in the process now? Will they still try to sneak in something and then we'll just keep quiet about not feeling great? Like, how do they deal with it?
It took a while. I mean, each one of them were different. We still have lots more to do detox for my oldest, but my youngest bounced back immediately. Like, and I was one of those, again, nerd moms. I would do the allergy test because I wanted to see the markers come down okay. and feel safe. So I remember the one time, and it was just a couple years in, my oldest, the markers were all gone. And I let him go out and have pizza with his friends. So they can have these foods, but once in a while. Like, so the symptoms aren't extreme. The body can tolerate these foods again. But they know, like, if he goes out too many times with the friends and has it, things will start creeping up on him.
How often should people then do the markers once they've cleared it from the system to be able to? And how important are knowing those markers so that you can maybe also indulge or enjoy?
Yeah, yeah. I did them every year. If you do them any sooner than that, you might not see any movement because mm-hmm. it's really neat. I mean, it comes in a color-coded barcode, right? And you can see them come down and the numbers decrease. So yeah, every year I saw sizable movement. It was wonderful to see. And just like we were talking about adults, you know yourself. You know, you have the once and then the twice and then the third time you're going to pay for it, then just stop it too if you can. I mean, I'm still craving cheese all these years later, but I know if I eat it, I will really pay for it. Mm-hmm. So you find cashew cheese. I love cashew cheese now.
So you're able to do that.
Yeah.
In the intro and as I was researching and looking at things, to read that if undiagnosed, if you know, left untreated, some of these allergies, it really does lead to chronic illness later on. So what have you seen, or you've done a lot of the research, you've read these books, what is inevitably waiting for you if you're not dealing with this?
I think that's going to be completely different for every single person, right? And I often wonder, like, because celiac is one of the most severe, right? Even a crumb sets them off. And I wonder if does it slowly compound in the body and then one day, boom, or does it just go like a switch off on? I don't know. I'm still reading. I'm still learning. My families teach me now. But I know that in my boys, it definitely compounded. It crept up over time. Like the tantrums just got bigger, louder. Their foods got reduced to like just literally four. They would eat just four things. And you know, as a mom, like I also listen to your mommy instinct. You know somewhere, you know, if you listen to that little voice inside, which meditation helps with, you listen to that little voice and it's right. Just follow it. Just listen to your instinct.
When I went through your website, the blogs, the topics were amazing, right? So you have the blog on the pooping. you had on the picky eaters. So you're going through things. One thing that I came across and I wasn't familiar with, so I want to ask you, was it the NEMCHECK or...
Nemechek protocol.
Yeah. What is that?
I was actually asked to write that. A friend of mine working at a clinic asked me to read it and write it just for my thoughts. And I want to do a comparison because there's so much literature out there of like things you can do, diets you can like, oh my God, there's like books written on all these different diets, you know, GFCF, and then there's the specific carb diet. And then there's the, you know, oxalate diets and the Fengold diet.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm getting off
you
topic.
Know what? No, but no, I pretty much think I know quite a bit that's going on. But you didn't mention there keto or vegan or paleo. Like, those are the common ones. What on earth did you just mention? Like, what were you talking about? Sorry. I'm like, nope, never heard of it. What are you talking about?
There's this incredible woman I follow, Julie Matthews, and she pretty much founded it all. But she, now 20 years in nutrition, she helps children with learning difficulties or on the spectrum or ADD, and she's finding that their bodies just aren't able to tolerate some of the things that are in foods, and one oxalates and salicylates. So this is like a subset category of things in foods other than gluten and casein that's
so
in the dairy.
It's a subset. It's a different category.
It's like, yeah.
Oxalates?
Yeah.
What are they? I'm sorry. I would like to know.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially too, I think right there, you just piqued the interest of people who do have children on the spectrum, you know, with learning to spill. Like right now, you've piqued their interest a little bit more to go,
Okay. So basically, it's just a subset of oxalates are basically crystals, and the body just can't break them down. So they just end up circulating in the body and causing all kinds of havoc. You can have like bladder infections. You know, it hurts when you pee, when the child pees. Eyes, your eyes hurt. You're constantly rubbing your eyes. Joints. It's really fascinating how these crystals just kind of migrate all over the body just because they can't be broken down. And again, she's finding a lot of these children on the spectrum are having these issues. Just can't break down the food properly. After you know, do the gluten and casein diet and your child gets better, but then these new behaviors coming out, then start looking at subsets. Are they having too many nightshades? You know, potatoes, mushrooms, tomatoes, they all have a subset of, I can't remember what the word is, but there's something in that food family that the body can't break down. So it's different per child. So she just helps. And I've followed her. Actually, I'm looking at taking her certification course because it's fascinating as you get through all the levels to find out, okay, what else, what's going on? My child's body is not tolerating these things. If that answers your question.
Okay, so it does. And then I'll can't bring it back because the name check is how we went on this.
Yes.
Okay, so what was that again?
Okay, really fascinating. So he is a doctor in the States and he specialized in children on the spectrum. And his big thing is, okay, I'm going to get this right. Olive oil, so he treats them like with really good quality omegas, and then that's it, a prebiotic, so not a probiotic, prebiotic, so food for the microflora, inulin, and that's it. So he's literally treating kids with olive oil, that's your omegas and your fats, and inulin to feed the good bacteria. And okay. These kids are getting better.
Okay, and I'm sorry because I might throw everyone off right now. Wasn't there something oil? There was like a movie. What is it? Lorenzo's Oil. Why am I feeling like this is a similar, like, right? Veronica's yelling at me right through the window. It's perfect. Is that similar? Like, there was something. Like, there was this oil that this dad created for his son. He was really, really sick. Yeah, Lorenzo's Oil. Is it? I don't know what's in Lorenzo's oil, but it was something. So for him, it was an olive oil and a prebiotic.
Yep.
And is it mixed, what, like a teaspoon? Like you taking it like before you eat? Like how is it done?
You would mix it with the child's food. And again, his thing is slow, very slow progression. So a very small dose and you build up and you build up and you build up. And for some, like for some families, it's a godsend. I'm actually working with a doctor. He sees children on the spectrum and the ones that don't respond to probiotics because sometimes their bowel flora are so bad and just overgrown that even a tiny amount of probiotics will set them off. Like we call it die off and you'll get severe behaviors. He's treating them with inulin instead and they're getting better. So that's what that book was about. They asked me to read it and I was like, yes and no. He doesn't get into supplementation like vitamins and minerals. Like that's important too. If the child is a picky eater and they're not eating any whole foods or protein,
yeah,
you still need to get that in.
Okay, because that was what I wanted to get to next because, you know, you talk about that and part of what you do in the supplementation. Yeah. So let's deal with that because one of your things was on picky eaters.
Yep.
So you are dealing with that. You realize they are not eating certain foods that they would be getting proper vitamins. So how do you counterbalance?
Yeah, just like we did all those years ago. So, and it's hilarious when I see myself what I became. I was like this mad scientist. So what I would do, and that's what I counsel my families now, is the first thing, get them on smoothies. Get your child liking smoothies. It doesn't matter how thin they can drink it or thick with an avocado, right? And they can spoon it because you can throw all kinds of vitamins and minerals in there and get them in. Because if the child, like you said, is not eating the foods, you have to start getting them in that way so you can bring balance back. And that's what I did. So slowly. Oh, I should also say that you can also get a blood test and see what vitamins and minerals you're low in. And then you know where to supplement. So again, with my oldest, finding out that he had literally no calcium, no magnesium, like no zinc, like all these things were like barely registering. So I had to have a bottle of each and put them in a smoothie every single morning. And that making sure that he got it in. And he slowly it changed.
I don't think we're very familiar with how much we really should be having of any of those supplements, right? Like how much of the zinc and the magnesium and the vitamin D and the calcium do you break that? Do you know, is it based per age, per child, per weight, per what they're not getting?
What I did back then and what I do now is I just go with the symptoms of the child. So I've learned, and again, through school, that's what tied it all together for me. When you are deficient in certain vitamins and minerals, the body will show classic signs.
Okay, so let's go through that.
Yeah.
So they're deficient in vitamin C. Is there something that you would be able to see on the other side?
Vitamin C, vitamin A, you might find like brittle nails, dry skin, like your hair breaking off. What was the other thing? When you need good fats in your diet, when you need EFAs, this one's very interesting. You get this bumpy rash. And it's usually on your torso or the back of your arms. So usually parents will come to say, oh, he has this weird rash. I'm like, is it on the back of his arms? They're like, yeah, how'd you know? That's a classic marker that you're missing essential fatty acids.
So you need some. Does that apply for adults as well?
Yeah. I have some adults with that. It's like, you know what? Start giving yourself the fish oil. I and again, halfway in there for my kids, I was like, I should be taking this stuff. So I started as well. So I go with symptoms. That's how I kind of feel through it because everyone's different. You correlate. But again, you learn through the schooling vitamins and minerals when you're deficient. Oh, here's another one. Zinc. Really important. Totally underestimated. Zinc. If you are deficient in zinc, your taste buds go off. So that makes me think, again, that's also involved in picky eating. Chicken and egg. They're not eating the foods that they need to be eating. It's just kind of spiraling down. So they're missing those vitamins and minerals in order to be able to want them, right? Their taste buds go off. And again, I saw that in my son. We were supplementing zinc. Da, da, da. And then somewhere in there, he started expanding. He reached on my plate, took a piece of broccoli and ate it. I was like.
Because they're not able to have it. They're not differentiating the taste if you're.
I think it tastes bad. From what I read, it could either taste bad to them or like burn their mouth or make their tongue feel itchy, like eating a nut. You'll miss the certain enzymes that you need in the mouth or in the digestive system, and it'll be off. And they maybe can't vocalize it either. But I see that now in my families. Like, they just won't eat that. They're sensory for texture or for a certain taste. They just want sweet. Oh, they just want salty. That kind of all means something of what's going on inside when they're craving.
Does the same apply to an adult when we're craving salt and we're craving certain things?
It might.
we're deficient in certain things. So, you know, it's one to be able to have the dialogue with a child as to what's happening, or if they're too young to be able to see this. What is happening when the children are incredibly young? Like, you're already dealing with it at 4 and 5. But, you know, you could have people even very early on that know a certain food is deadly. It's one thing to kind of have outbursts, but another one to know that they could die. How serious and how early on is that detected for people?
Another good question. So I work with the Ottawa Anaphylaxis Support Group, the OASG, and they're an amazing group of people. And again, they're just that. They're the families with a very, very young child and very, very severe allergies. They're all EpiPen territory. You know, they advocate, they help you. There's resources. They help you go into the schools. They're great. I've heard their stories and it's just phenomenal because, you know, there's a whole like the introduction of foods when your baby, you know, becomes over 12 months. And their people are just petrified now to introduce that peanut, right? Because of everything that's out there and what's going on. They're now scared. So now I'm like saying, okay, you know what? Don't make them eat it. If you have any hint of it being in your family, you know what you do? The easiest thing you can do is put it on the inside of the child's wrist. That's your most sensitive skin, and that's very close to the veins there. And leave it for 24 hours, well, the remnants of it, and you'll see if a rash starts to come out, there's an allergy there. But, I mean, you don't have to go as far as testing it. But
okay, yeah, it's funny that you say that most people are terrified. Like, I didn't even think about it.
Same.
When I gave my kids peanut butter for the first time, I didn't think about it. Yep. But it was not in my family history. There wasn't anything I hadn't been exposed to. Yep. Allergies per se. So for some, it's not even in their thought process. Nope. And for others, they are sitting, you know, stuck with anxiety over even the thought and the process of introducing these foods. Yep. And do some people just not introduce them for fear of that?
Yep. Yep, they won't have it in the house. Like, and again, I get it, because there's the moms who are on EpiPens themselves. They won't have it in the house, and they don't want to expose
the
child.
But that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. There's, as you were talking about, too, because it's past, the, you know, there is that.
Yep.
That there would be that fear.
Mm-hmm. Completely. Same thing, on the same vein, I have some where they learned, you know what I mean? Like the child eats a mouthful and then throws up, or the swelling happens, or they rush to ER, or maybe they didn't because it wasn't severe enough, but at some point or another, they start to see an allergist and realize, okay, as the more that my child is ingesting it, it compounds and it's just going to get worse each time. And then they're like, okay, none in the house, none. And trying to make family understand that, you know what? We don't want it to be any more severe than it already is. Please do not bring it in the house.
Is there a, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my gosh. Like difference between boys and girls? Are boys like
gender?
Is gender? Yeah, is gender a factor?
Wow. No, not with what I see. Not with what I see. Not for allergies. Not with allergies. I mean, having a diagnosis is a whole other ball game. But no, not for allergies. Not what I see. I'm not seeing. Hmm. I'm just seeing when I start to ask the questions. You know, like how was the birth? Did you breastfeed? Was it a C-section? Were they given antibiotics?
There a difference between a C-section and a natural?
Yes.
Why would you ask those questions?
Yes.
Okay. Why?
And it's really cool too, the stuff that they're doing overseas. Okay. So when the baby goes through the birth canal, literally. What's happening is they will inhale, like as they come out, they will inhale mom's probiotics for the first time. That's their first exposure to it, is when they pass near, you know.
Through the canal.
Yeah, through the canal. Yeah. That's when they're inhaling it. But if they're being pulled out of the belly, not having that trip, they don't have any exposure to probiotics. So what they're doing now overseas is really neat. They're swabbing mom. They're swabbing mom, and then they're putting it in the child's mouth. So they can have it inoculated with their first probiotics. That's where it comes from. And then when you breastfeed, that's also probiotics. You're getting the good guys from mom. So if you do C-section and then you do bottle and then they have an ear infection and then you start with the antibiotics, I always tell my clients.
You want to fight off the antibiotics. Is
they just kind of decimate everything, good and bad. And then what happens is the bad guys are more aggressive. So picture a field of dandelions. Just dandelions take over, and that's what's happening inside. And then you'll start to have the rashes and the symptoms start popping up with what's going on inside. So it's really fascinating. So those are the things that I look at, and I really haven't seen. Excellent question. If there's a gender difference,
no,
at all.
But well, yeah. Listen, that question just led to, you know, if it's a C-section or a vaginal birth, and I would never have thought that the inhaling of the prebiotics is part of this.
Yeah. Really neat.
And
stuff.
Do the parents and the families that are sitting there and you ask them that question, do they ask, why did you ask that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll tell them. It's funny because it's like, it's been my world for so long. I don't realize that other people don't know this stuff. So when I'm telling it to them, the look on their faces, I'm like, oh yeah. Because I'm on all these pages and I read all these things that they're doing overseas and it's just so cool. So yeah, that's what they're doing now. They're swabbing and putting it in the child's mouth.
Are we doing that here in North America or that's just being done in Europe?
I think so. So far. So far what I've seen. I think so. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's a pregnant woman right now who eventually ends up in a C-section and she's on the table and be like, hey, by the way, can you just swab me? You know, and just put a little bit in my baby's mouth. And they're going, oh, haven't you read the newest research?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who knows? You know, it might come, but it makes sense. It makes sense. The studies are now there and showing, right?
Mm-hmm. So this business for you has made sense. How many families, like on average, are dealing with this? Is there a percentage of children who have it, who deal with it? What are we seeing?
It's funny because my perspective, I'd say, is now skewed because that's all that I see, right? That's all that I see. Like I would say 100% of my families, the child is experiencing any kind of range of symptoms, and maybe mom or dad learn from the child. When we start talking about, you know, what's happening, they're deficient, they start doing testing, and then mom goes, you know what, I've got XYZ, I should start doing some testing. It's usually like, and then it'll work backwards just like it did for us. Our boys taught us. So yeah, my perspective is kind of skewed because I see them all.
You've been able to connect all the dots backwards, right?
Backwards.
When we talked about, because we mentioned pooping right off the bat, because we're going to have a lot of nonverbal young children, at what point are you looking? I mean, I remember getting the, you know, the green stuff, like, you know, the transition is from baby on. I can't remember it all now. It's been a while ago. But how much focus should you put on what's coming out?
Thank you so much for asking that, because it's one of the topics that families are averse to. But you know what? My specialist long time ago said to me, the state of what's coming out reveals the state of what's inside. And again, when I was going through with my oldest, like weird, like green and red, and I literally at one point we were having white. So I remember going white, like just white, no color. And I'm like, that's really, you know, you feel it in your stomach. Like, that's wrong. Something's really wrong.
White. I mean,
so,
I get the red because anyway, if you've had beets, like,
yeah, or something,
peaked, like, you know, but white, like what's in that? Like what, like nutrient? Like, I'm just trying to think, like there's nothing to.
Well, being.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I'll let you go.
Being the nerd that I am, I literally Googled it. And again, other moms have, there are blogs out there dedicated to poop. And that's what I found. And literally, color means something. So white poop means that literally he wasn't making enough bile to break down the foods. So like, as I monitored it, like, sure enough, like pieces of food were coming out completely undigested, pieces of meat, pieces of corn, like way back, he wasn't digesting anything. White means there's no bile. They're not breaking down anything. And green is the other way. Green is too much bile. Maybe they're getting too much fat and their body's just excreting all this bile. So it's fascinating, like they're sandy, that like, so color and texture all mean something. And again, my intuition was screaming at me, there's something to
wrong.
It.
Okay, so we've covered white, we've covered green and color. Then you just mentioned texture. Mm-hmm. So what are we looking at there?
Okay, so that's what I say to my boys and all my families. The questions that you want to ask, you're like, okay, so you're going once a day, fine, but is it logs or is it pebbles, right? So texture, there's literally, it's called a Bristol chart. It will show you, like in the doctor's office, they'll be like, oh, you should be right around here. And it should be like a nice normal log, and no pain, no bloating, no gas. But as you start to deviate either way, so this is hilarious that we're just talking about.
I think it's so valuable. Trust me. So, and I'm telling you right now, there are parents right now who are going, okay, at their pen and paper out, yeah, going, okay, so let's go back. So the log. Okay, so let's go texture.
Yeah. So log, just a solid straight line, no straining, it should come out. But if you go the other way, if it's too watery and there's air and they're gassy, so it's fermentation is going on, too much water. So for whatever reason, the bowel is drawing too much water into it just to excrete it. And that's usually a case where somebody, again, has an intolerance and the body is trying to eliminate it. Like when you have diarrhea, when you have a flu. Body's trying to, you know, fast track and eject bacteria and something it doesn't tolerate. So that's usually what I'm seeing too, is like it will eject it really, really fast and be like, watery. You know, yeah, we all watery and not even formed and maybe some pieces of food in it.
Okay.
And then you go the other way.
So sometimes people think, oh gosh, I have diarrhea.
Yeah.
But it's not. It could be an intolerance or something to what you've eaten. Okay.
So you have to watch, like, again, in context, right? If you have it for just a week and it goes back to normal, maybe it was a bug. But if it's chronic and ongoing and slowly getting worse and you're starting to like, okay, I need to do some tests and stuff, then start looking at all these other options, right? Look at food intolerances. Look at, you know, okay, what am I eating? Is it, what's going on? Is it IBD forming? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many things that it could be, but it's like chronically.
Okay. We did not hit on the rabbit one, the small, yeah. So
pebbles.
The pebbles.
So that's the total other extreme. And this is what I say to people too, is like, okay, so normally you should be going once a day. But the longer it sits in there, it's not like a parking lot where it just sits there. The longer that it stays in there, the bowels and intestines are still massaging it. So it's still pulling water out of it. So it becomes harder and harder and harder. And then there's no lubrication. So it becomes really hard to pass, right? So then you're left with these dry rabbit pebbles, like you were saying. And all the water is drawn out of it. And then what's happening in the body with that is that it's called auto intoxication again. It's literally pulling back in the toxins that should be eliminated. So getting the kids pooping is so important. Like 90% of the families that I see now, the kids are not pooping. They're on prescriptions or they're going, you know, every couple of days. And again, same thing. I didn't think anything of it. But now that I know better, getting them pooping every day is so important.
How safe then is using a suppository if you notice that your child's going days without it, that you would say this would be when I would consider?
Yeah. I mean, I was there. Again, chronically, if it's something that's ongoing and they're just getting worse, they're getting bloated, or I've had that wonderful trip to the ER where they're impacted, then start to look at something is causing the body to not move. Like that, it's called peristalsis, when the muscles of the intestines, and literally when you take a first bite of food, the whole thing moves, like all the way down. The whole thing starts to wave and push it out. So if that's not happening, there's something underlying stopping the body from doing it, right? So you have to look at that. But yeah, in a pinch. I also say there's other things like you can do Epsom salt bath. That's pure magnesium. That can usually help. And then way back when my kids were young, I was doing this too. Castor oil. Old grandma's trick. Castor oil rub on the stomach. We'll start to get things moving. It literally gets soaked in and lubricates and starts to get things moving.
The same thing for an adult?
Yeah. Done it.
Real. And yep. You felt it work?
Oh, yeah. And there's other things now too.
Okay, like, so this is, and this is like, I think people, this is goes way beyond kids. Okay, so castor oil on, rub just a little bit.
Right on your stomach, okay. Right on your intestines, right there, right on your belly, and it'll get soaked right in.
Okay, yeah. So that's one. What else, what other tricks do you have?
There's teas. There's certain teas. Fennel tea is amazing. It can get the, senna tea. Oh my gosh. My boys are going to laugh when I talk about this. We call it clean out tea. So once a month, for me, I'm like religious about this, and we all get clean out tea, like just once a month for peace of mind. And it makes, like, you have a glass of it in the morning and 5 hours later, you're just like,
it's out.
It's all out. And it's just an herb. So this is the stuff that I recommend to my family. So Epsom salt baths, herbs. And there's actually this essential oil that I just recently purchased. And same thing that's in it. It's licorice and fennel. Same thing. All you need is a few drops rubbed on your belly. And in a couple hours, you're in the bathroom.
Those are really good.
I know. They're really good tips to get things moving. But yeah, like, depending on how long it's been going on and if it's compounding in the system,
it's not
going to
be the
worse,
quick fix. Yeah. Like, you haven't gone in a week and you do that. That's not the quick solution.
No, there's something else going on. Yeah.
How are tests covered, you know, to go get this blood work done, to go get this? How far are we in terms of being proactive about it?
Some are, some aren't. Some people have really good doctors, you know, that will do it on prescription covered by OHIP, and then some plans will cover it.
Yeah. So you just have to start asking the questions.
Start asking questions, looking for answers.
Okay. There's a ton of answers. There's a ton of great information on your website. It's www.allergiesandme.ca.
Yeah.
Is that just the best thing for people to go there? There's some resources, there's blogs. Like, what were you hoping to have for people on that first look on that website?
Just sharing our story, hoping that it resonates with them, and that if they want to look for answers, start, you know, taking action, start making changes, and just to connect and then go from there. There's so many resources in the city that I've just uncovered that are amazing, local people, passionate, that can help. It's just about connecting people with what they need.
And it's available. Like, there's a resource center, there's sources, everything.
Yeah.
That's there. Okay, so allergiesandme.ca is the best way to reach out to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do people come to you? Are you going to people's homes? Like, how does it work with you?
I work at three different clinics in the West End, actually, kind of like a day per, and then some Skype, some Zoom, some phone. And yeah, I've actually visited homes.
I was going to say, do you help? I would think probably the biggest asset is having you go through that pantry.
Oh, yeah.
I would think, right? Yeah. Like, if I'm in that kind of, I would think having you in my pantry.
I have done that.
Yeah.
I had one mom, she had a newborn and a toddler, and she was overwhelmed. So yeah, totally. I helped her. I had another mom, I went grocery shopping with her. She was just like, again, that overwhelm. Yeah. And then you just get kind of frozen. What do I do next?
That's the worst, right? Is that often happens. So it's too overwhelming, so you do nothing.
Yep.
And that's not helping the situation.
Yep. So that's like one step at a time.
Well, happy pooping, everyone. I know everyone's going to be looking in the toilet at least in the next day or so when listening to this and be like, so what's that? What's waiting for me in the toilet bowl? And that, with that being said, I will wrap up this edition of Living Your Life with Leanne Lang. I do want to say thank you to everyone who has liked and shared and subscribed and commented. And the best thing is word of mouth. Let your friends know about the podcast, the subjects. We're 100 and some episodes in. It's been fantastic to see. But it's people like you who help to make the podcast grow. So thank you so much for that. And that is a wrap. Lori, thank you so much. Really appreciate the info. Really
thank
great
you
things.
Again.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day, everyone.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.